Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom. That you have a nickname, and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easiest for us to collect. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests, and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh yes, you're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, and let me turn my mic down a bit. And welcome to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parkes, and I am your producer and questioner, relay, and answer, and other dog's body kind of type activities here at Wolf Spirit Radio. In fact, at Ever Beyond Radio on today's alternative Sunday service, which begins with Simon Parkes, Connecting Consciousness with your host, Simon Parkes. Hello, Simon. How are you?
Well, better late than never. Hey, that was amazing. I thought we weren't going to get on live at all.
Only 9 minutes today.
Well done.
Not bad.
And I am on holiday, but I was always going to do the show even though I'm on holiday. And if I hadn't, I would certainly have, you know, sent you a message. So I'm very happy to be on holiday and just as happy to be on the show.
Oh, excellent. Right. So, while I get to the questions, if anybody's asked any today, I'm sure somebody has. I think there's plenty there. Would you like do you have any announcements that you wish to make while I'm scrabbling about now?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, for the shungite you sent me. And I've had some shungite sent from somebody else. I'm very grateful. And I want to thank everyone who's sent me donations to keep me going very recently. That's been wonderful. And what I'm going to do when I come back from holiday is go through and personally write to everyone who's made a donation to me to thank them. It doesn't matter whether it's £1 or $1 or $100. I'm going to say thank you very much indeed. Can't do it on air because it would just take too much time, but I am going to write individually to everyone. All right, so that's that, and it's a very heartfelt thank you to everyone. Now, I've got some news. We'll start with the easy news, and then we'll get more serious. Easy news, many people, including myself, have said that there is some sort of financial situation around the corner, and end of last week in Great Britain, they announced they were going to put £50 billion pounds, which is a lot of money, into the economy because it wasn't looking too good. And we have in this country, that the Americans won't be very aware of, but it's called VAT, value-added tax. And they're going to cut it. They're going to actually cut VAT because they think that if they cut VAT, everyone's going to run out and buy all the things they're not buying at the moment. This is a very big sign that Great Britain PLC is in very difficult position. So £50 billion added into the economy, and they're going to cut the value added tax. So please keep an eye on that. It's not looking so good. Right. More serious news. A number of people very kindly have sent me some links to a remote viewing organization, which is called the Farsight Institute. And just for the record, I was aware of this. But I'm always grateful when people send me links because sometimes I don't see them. Sometimes I miss them. People were sending me the links asking, you know, what can we do? And sort of, I'm not saying people were fearful, but they were somewhat concerned about the link. And if you go onto YouTube and you just look at Farsight Institute for the warnings for August, you'll see some very interesting, hour or so video. I talked previously about the situation with HAARP and the potential for action in California, the west coast of America, for the San Andreas Fault. And that still remains a possibility. The Farsight Institute in July had a look at a key date in August, that's this month. And they, three individual people who were not related and are geographically distant, I think somebody was in Great Britain, someone was in America, I'm not sure where the other person was, they all came back with very similar warnings, which was some sort of 9/11 event all over again, but not two towers, but one tower. And they weren't clear as to what could cause it. Now, I want to say this, first of all, which is particularly poignant to people who are going to watch the Farsight interview. The timeline that these remote viewers saw is not necessarily the timeline that is going to take place. I absolutely agree with them that it is a timeline that some very evil people wish to make happen. And I'm going to give some extra information which is not on that video. The weapon that these people see as being used is what we call it is a kinetic round. There are almost spaceships, they're not quite spaceships, they're certainly much bigger than just your normal satellites, but there are some very large installations in orbit around the Earth which are recorded as weather satellites or communication satellites. They're no such thing. There are three sorts of platforms, weapons platforms out there. One is a nuclear, straightforward nuclear weapon. And the second is a plasma or an energy beam type weapon. And the third one is a kinetic round weapon. This is basically a gun that fires a tungsten or another dense metal shell. And this particular remote viewing foresaw, although they didn't know what they were foreseeing, it is a kinetic tungsten round which is fired. And as it hits the atmosphere or penetrates the atmosphere, it can actually sometimes disintegrate and explode and then change direction. The very, very evil people wish to plant a low-yield nuclear bomb, which will have minimal radiation. And when the tungsten round is fired, it strikes a building, they simultaneously detonate this. So what you get is a mushroom cloud. But it isn't a nuclear explosion in the sense that it's anything like what we would understand. So it's very low radiation. It's just there to provide the huge mushroom cloud so that anybody looking who's not military or doesn't have the knowledge would immediately say that is a nuclear missile that's been fired. So what we're looking at is a tungsten round, and for argument, for evidence sake, back end of last year, 2 years ago, in China, a number of chemical installations, refineries were taken out, and it was the same weapon that was used. Now, you know the difference between a kinetic round and an energy beam weapon round or a nuclear missile, because with a kinetic round, you will hear a whizzing sound. And it's interesting that a number of these remote viewers reported a sort of a vzz, vzz sound. That's absolutely classic for a kinetic round. And then one of the actual remote viewers said that the president was going to come on television and make a statement. This would be a self-inflicted attack so that somebody else can be blamed for it. The question is whether it's going to be a false flag for an alien attack or a false flag for Russian attack. I'm stressing that this is not on the cards to happen. It is a timeline that some evil people wish to see, and the remote viewers have picked up on that. It does not mean that's going to happen. So that explains to our listeners why I haven't moved on the HAARP San Andreas fault. Because I think people were thinking, well, he's told us this about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Why isn't he doing anything? It's because before the remote viewing was made public on YouTube, I was already aware that there was another angle that some of these very sick people were playing on. So all the people who've emailed me or messaged me on Skype, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I am aware of it. I'm just trying to get some more information on that. The target location is America. Of course it's America. So please don't think that it's imminent. When I get some more information, then we're going to deal with it as a connecting consciousness worldwide group. So there you go. I would ask people to go and have a look at the Farsight Institute, but please do not get fearful. It's not set as going to happen. It is just simply a timeline that these very gifted people have spotted. All right, JP, that's that. Let's get on with the questions, eh?
Okie doke. Mm-hmm. From Kirsten. Dear Simon, could you please tell us a little more about inner Earth humans? How many different races are there? How many are there in total? Are all benevolent to the surface population? What do they think about disclosure? Thank you both for your brave commitment. Love and light, Kirsten.
Well, that's very kind, Kirsten. Thank you. It's very difficult sometimes when you put yourself out and open yourself up to people. yes, when Lumeria and Atlantis had what we could loosely call a falling out, been politically at each other's throats for a very long time, but they actually engaged in the war. The resulting war basically put paid to both civilizations. It didn't wipe them out, it just basically put them right back to zero. A number of survivors from both Lumeria and Atlantis decided that greed, anger, egotistical behavior, all of these things had created this situation. So what they wanted to do was try and run away is not the right word, but remove themselves from those energies. In other words, they didn't want that to occur again, so they took themselves off. And there was already a colony under the earth, but gained access to it, and the rule of thumb was that they would never engage with the surface populations again. They'd wash their hands of them. However, as time went by, they had to decide whether they had a responsibility to pass on the knowledge that they'd learnt and they'd gone through, and could they then pass that on to the surface dwellers and say, look, we made this mistake, we're determined not to do it again, we'd like to share that with you. So it was the usual rule of thumb. Volunteers were called for and they went out. But recently it's become an official policy now for those people from Agartha, the Hollow Earth humans, to actively become involved now on the surface. So they've joined with other groups, and they play an important role because they have not hidden knowledge in the sense of, you know, anything secret or magic, but they have knowledge of how they made mistakes. And therefore, if they can bring that through, they can then show the people on the surface not to go down that road. In terms of the races, it depends how you look at them. They actually now consider themselves one race, as the Agarthan race. But if you were to look at their star families or their genetics, then there are at least five that I'm aware of, five separate groups. Although publicly those groups would banner themselves under one heading, but privately they would consider themselves separate. So some Lyran humans, very pure groups, are quite strongly represented there. So yeah, they have joined others to try to influence for the better the situation on the surface. So thank you for your question. Thank you for your kind words, Kirsten.
Very good answer. I'm very interested in the Lyrans and the Hollow Earth. And, you know, Simon, today, who would characterize the Lemurians and the Atlanteans? How would you, if we saw that conflict today happening, what was the character of the Lemurians? What's the character of the Atlanteans? Could that translate to today, or is it nothing to do with today?
It's harder to translate it today simply because first of all, the technologies that we have are based differently. We are very, very, very micro-circuit silicon AI involved. The Atlanteans and Lumerians were hooked to AI. However, they were far more organically centered. So the Lumerians used crystals to a lesser extent than the Atlanteans. The Atlanteans had a real strong crystal technology for communicating, for creating energy and power, and also for extending life. That's something that we don't often hear about. The Lumerians were more political, the more down-to-earth. Physically, the Atlanteans were taller, blonde hair. The Lumerians were somewhat shorter, a little bit more stocky, but not at all, you know, like a Neanderthal, not sort of solid, but not as strongly made as a modern person. They were still quite slim, but compared to the Atlanteans, they were very different. So if you think about Lord of the Rings and elves from the Lord of the Rings films, then that would give you a very, very good idea of what an Atlantean might look like. In terms of today, you've got America, Russia. It's very, very polarized politically, but you've got so many different countries all vying for control of this planet one way or another that we don't have the same dynamics. You have a time ago when there were two major human cultures, and so there was a very different, there was no middle person to play off against somebody else. You had external alien races popping in now and again, but in this country, both America and others will use the smaller countries to be pawns on a chessboard. And to a certain extent, although I don't agree with it, that has diffused a war because there's been this third party. But if you've just got A and B facing up to each other, well, you're going to get a war sooner than later, and that's what occurred with Lumeria and Atlantis.
Thank you. I think it's really important for people to know their history and to make the history alive, you know, to feel what it's like.
Yeah. Many people can connect to the Atlanteans and they will say, you know, this, that and the other, but very few will connect to the Lumerians. And the reason for that was that the Lumerians did not connect energetically to their crystals in the same way the Atlanteans did. And so therefore, there are more people who are descendants from Atlantis now who will remember it because of this, the connection with the crystal technology doesn't get worn away. It keeps quite strong in people. But with Lumeria, the technology was less crystal based. Therefore, the frequency was different. Therefore, people living now, have less of a connection to that time. So that's why you'll see so many people who say, oh, I can remember Atlantis. But how many people will say to you, I can remember Lumeria? But it's not because there are less. It's simply the memories of those Lumerians are gone.
Yeah, it's a very different attitude, I think. Is frequency is attitude, isn't it?
Yes.
So, thank you. So, next question. Segueing nicely, just the next question along from Bob K. Emerald Isle. Konasatatu, which is, how are you? Many thanks to both. No, I won't do it. Many thanks for both of you for our continuing education. Wishing peace, love, joy, and happiness to both of you and all throughout our multiverse. Simon, do trees carry messages of Mother Earth to and from the sun and or source? And do birds help transmit these energies so we can listen and hear them? Do we harm Mother Earth when we cut the grass or trim the trees? Thank you, Emerald. Thank you, Emerald Isle.
Right, that's a lovely, Ireland is a wonderful place, you know. I've never been there. I need to go there. Absolutely tremendous.
Hey, do you want to come over? I mean, I'm not kidding, because there's an idea to go over in September, you know.
I'll let you know.
In a ferry, you know.
I think it depends.
Yeah.
How serious we all are. Anyway.
That'd be cool. But anyway, meanwhile.
Yeah, no, it's a really nice offer. And seriously, it just does depend on, you know, where we're at. Right. It's actually a damn fine question. No, you don't harm the earth when you cut the grass or you trim the trees. providing you're only trimming them. Right. The questioner understands that the leaves of a tree are facing the sunlight, and the roots of the tree are connecting into the earth. And therefore, it's absolutely logical that if both water, as we know water can encode information, and we know that, and sunlight through photons can also encode information. So unlike a bog standard scientist, I don't just accept that a leaf makes photosynthesis. I don't just believe that a leaf is there to make energy, etc. Part of its project, I think, is to receive. It doesn't have to decode it at all. It receives the sunlight. It passes it down through its own internal arterial system, which we would call sap. And although roots tend to draw upwards, we understand through capillary action, information can pass down through the roots, but not through liquid, but through almost electrical pulses. And we know that trees can communicate with each other and plants can communicate, because even our regular scientists have found that if a tree is attacked by some sort of predatory beetle, then it can send information through its root system that can be detected by other trees. Now, what's amazing is that's a regular scientist, and that's accepted now. But where on earth do you ever get taught that in university? Where do they ever teach that? Because that's one step towards saying that a tree has some form of consciousness. And of course, they don't want to go there. So you'll find these reports buried away and not actually out for the public. Yes, a tree will do that. It'll also drop its leaves. The leaves will fall on the ground and deteriorate. But most of the communication is through the roots. Now, if you've got a water course running close to the tree and the tree's roots can break into that water course, then the tree can receive information from maybe 200-300 miles away and pass information through onto the water. So if you're going to do anything to a tree, then it's always best to communicate with the tree, explain why you're going to do it, and ask its permission, because a tree lives. It doesn't move, and as we understand it, you know, from a educational point of view, from a university, but it does have a consciousness and it is part of the planet. So, you know, the questioner is highly evolved, because the questioner understands this and has given me the opportunity to confirm what the questioner, I think, already knows, and to say that a tree has a consciousness, but also so does a rock. And this is where, of course, we would begin to lose many people who could perhaps accept that a tree can have a consciousness or a tree can feel, but really you'd lose them if you said, well, that cliff face also can feel, in inverted commas. So we need, obviously, to educate those people who don't listen to this show, don't listen to any other shows, don't educate themselves and are just part of all those people, unfortunately, who are asleep, that they can really impact for a positive this planet just by changing the way they live their lives. And I think that's the task of all of us to, you know, it's not just about dropping the paper bag or dropping some piece of plastic. It's far deeper than that. And we need to understand that this planet lives, and therefore we should respect it. And that's, of course, the point. How many parents actually respect their children? It's frightening that that doesn't happen in the way that we think it should. So, you know, how many people then could respect the earth that they think doesn't live? And yet the earth respects the people. There is a covenant that exists between the planet Earth and the people, the human people on the planet Earth, which was forged many, many years ago when people on this planet were far more closely connected and would celebrate with the planet, would understand its cycles, understand its rhythms, celebrate in a non-sacrificial way. They would do it in a very, very organic way, through the energies. And the planet, thank goodness, hasn't forgotten that. So although so many people now act in a way that harms the planet realizes that this is a phase that humanity is going through. It also knows it's raising its own frequency, and it can detect that a number of people on the planet are also in tune with it. That's why it's never turned its back on us. That's why we've never had a pole shift. That's why you haven't had hundreds of volcanoes and earthquakes to wipe the people out. It's not going to do that. You know, and of course, what we talk about on this show, your regular scientist or, you know, your regular person would just say they're absolutely mad. And yet, they will be the ones who will be upset when a tree gets chopped down. But they don't know why. Or they will say, oh, we don't drop litter. But then they're doing it for the wrong reasons. They're not actually going into their own spirit and trying to communicate with the earth. They're just following a very basic thing about, well, this is what we're told to do. So, you know, thank you for the question. Really good. And thanks for your kind words.
Okay. Oops.
What was that?
Something went bink. Mini Black. I recently had a dream of doomsday events unfolding. At one point, while I was running in fear, we can see where this is going, I saw a hill up ahead in which the top shined with immensely bright and beautiful multicolored sparkling lights that in real life would have been impossible. Finally, this is what we've been waiting for, I thought to myself, running towards the lights and up the hill. When I got to the top, I saw the other side was a short but immediate drop into a pit of filth and despair, full of dead crows, with people weeping and mourning them. The light disappeared upon my discovery, and I stood there feeling sick, heartbroken and betrayed. What could this mean?
Right. There are many, many people on the planet now who are getting dreams, very, very strong dreams, and they're warnings. People who are connected to the planet or connected to some form of consciousness are receiving messages through dreams. This is the time of changing, and it's also the time of choice. And, you know, many people are reporting they're not eating as much food, they don't need as much sleep, or they're actually feeling really incredibly tired, but we're all reporting that they're feeling different from perhaps even 6 months ago. And so we are connected, those of us who have made that choice to are connected to the planet, and we are changing. Therefore, we will receive messages which are giving us warnings of some sort or another. The problem is that also the negative forces will attempt to send messages to destabilize or to confuse that individual. You know, if you've got a person who's doing very well, thank you, in terms of their spiritual development, it's, you know, that's the sort of person they'll send a horrible dream to try and put them off track. Or they will get a warning of something to protect them. So, you know, don't go near this hill because something may happen. Now, I can't interpret dreams like that. I can't do an individual dream. But what I would say is that you're not alone. There are very many people having dreams. And, you know, if you've got that dream, then heed it. Take note of it. And, you know, think about, without fear, actually. You don't want fear. But think about how you can use the information from that. And see, you know, make a note of it, write it down, see if you get a follow-up dream. Maybe 3 months' time you get something that makes sense, so you can compare that with the notes that you made on the first one. So, by all means, take note of it, but do not become fearful with it. But thank you for writing in.
Thank you very much. It's important at the moment to remain calm at all times. Stay in the observer mode. All right. Oh, now here's a variant. Oh, there's a... Now, here's a juicy question. Here we go. From Ashley. Can you explain the relationship between the story of Atlantis and Scientology? If one was to not know specifically which belief was being discussed, it would be difficult to discern, as they both use the same key terms, alien warlord, both names ending in the prefix nu, trapped in the earth, prison planet, erupting volcano, etc. Hubbard worked for Aleister Crowley. Did they create Scientology as a very close cover-up to the truth, or is there more to it than that even? Interesting, huh?
Right. It is interesting, and it's a well-researched question. Did you say it was Ashley?
Ashley, indeed.
Okay. I don't know, actually. I couldn't tell whether it was a female or a male from the name.
No, I don't know.
Right. Hubbard and Crowley were best of mates. The reason they were best of mates, interestingly, wasn't to do with magic. It was because both of them understood that the real birthplace of humanity and the way that humans had developed on this planet was already at that time hidden from the public. And they recognized that that there was something in it for them. And let me put it to you like that. Now, I don't want to upset anyone in any religious order. You just don't want to do it because it's pointless. You can't win an argument with somebody who is deeply religious. You can't argue. You can't rationally argue. And in my time, I've had the Church of Scientology write to me unbidden twice, just out of the blue, inviting me to join. And both cases I've just politely refused. There is a link, and we talked earlier about the war between Atlantis and Lumeria. There are a number of these religions which are almost cult-like who have secret knowledge. So both Hubbard and Aleister Crowley in their own disciplines had secret knowledge. So in the Church of Scientology, they are aware that the top person may not be human. If you look at the Jehovah's Witnesses, they say that 144,000 people will be saved, or I'm probably loosely translating that, but basically 144,000. And I'm always very concerned when somebody gives me numbers that run in the 3, 6, 9, 12. And it doesn't seem a very good religion that only saves 144,000 people. What happens to 144,001? What happens to that one person? At least with the Christian religion, everyone can be saved. It rather makes me think of a huge spaceship with 144,000 seats on it. Oh, run out of seats. You can't get on the spaceship. So I have absolutely no doubt from my own experience with these people that they know that off-planet entities control their organization at high level. They are aware of the connection between Atlantis because many of the people who were into crystal technology were able to divine and channel. The Lumerians were not very good at divining and channeling, but because of this crystal technology, Atlanteans were very much into that. And so they did unfortunately get infected by other cultures who were masquerading as something else and got into their culture, particularly through the keepers of the crystals. Now, these were the feminine environment, remember. Atlantis was a feminine-dominated culture. Lumeria was much more male-dominated. And so if you could get to one of these high priestesses, or they weren't quite priestesses, they were sort of keepers of hidden knowledge, keepers of hidden resource, then you could control that. And many people who have those information then obviously went and set their own groups up. They couldn't call them Atlantis Part 2. They might call them the Church of Scientology or something like that. So, yes, it's well worth doing some more research because both Hubbard and Crowley were very knowledgeable in their own right. You know, whatever we may think of them and whatever sort of people they may have been, they were incredibly knowledgeable. They had access to hidden in the sense that we don't find them in the public libraries, hidden information which was accurate about the history of humankind on this planet. But what could they do with that? Well, they wanted power and they wanted to control, so they'd set up their own separate groups. You'd have to pay money to join, and then you would be in a control system, and you would have information given out to you if you were very good boy and good girl. So I never joined any religious organization, frankly, because I've always believed that we need to look into ourselves, and I don't need somebody in a rather expensive uniform to tell me, you know, that I've been a good person or a bad person. So thank you. It's a really, really good question.
Here's an interesting question. They're all interesting. They're very, I mean, very kind of off the wall and you know, from different perspectives. Hi, Simon. This is from Jeff. Hi, Simon. I've been wondering what would happen to a reptilian if it consumed a large amount of hallucinogens that make you feel ultimate love and connection to the universe. If they are naturally resistant to them, how much would it take to make a breakthrough, and how long would this, how much do I have to feed my girlfriend? And, how long would this new perspective last? Sorry, I was being facetious, it's a humorous question, but I mean, I think there might be some.
Well, I'm quite happy to have
here.
You. Yeah, you know what? I'm quite happy to have humorous questions. You know, because sometimes they can develop into an avenue which no one else would have thought of or no one else would have asked. Right, well, first of all, the metabolism, the biological body of the creature concerned is very different. You know, if we humans get a common cold or a flu, which is a virus, you can't pass it to a cat. And likewise, a cat can get cat flu, but it can't give it to you because those things are specifically working with that particular body. So I'm not going to run away from the question. I'm just putting it straight, first of all, that you couldn't find anything on this planet that would do that to a reptilian. But let's suppose you could. What would happen is not what you think. The creature would burst into tears, because it would suddenly find all of its culture had led it down a particular road, and yet there was another way to see life. So the being would go into lockdown for God knows how many hours. It just wouldn't be able to cope with the new sensations which it had never experienced before and which it had never trained for and had no concept of, and it would think it was dying. So you would have to emotionally support the being during that process. You'd have to do it psychically, telepathically. But if the creature did not self-terminate, which it's likely it would do, but if it didn't, and then it came out of it, there are two possible results. The first one is it would completely deny it had ever experienced love, or it would become a renegade and form a splinter faction from the reptilian group. Again, if you think about Star Trek and the characters of the Borg, there are very similar roles played out here. But when you have a being that never has experienced love, and you give it love, it's a very human thing to think it would throw its arms up in the air and dance around, and you know that is unfortunately our perception of how we would be, but they wouldn't. They would go into total shock. So it'd have to be done in a very, very supportive way, doing that on its own is pointless unless there's going to be something positive at the end. And that positive at the end is, okay, make a choice. What do you want? The world that you've always had or what you've just been shown? And if you want the world you've just been shown, what can we do to encourage others to join that? So it's a really good question. Thank you.
Excellent. So now, from Roman, Russia. Hello, Simon. In the beginning of 2016, I began to translate your messages and shows into the Russian language. Since then, however, every day I've got weakness, tired, high-pitched buzz in my head, and I want to sleep all the days through. Do you think it might be some form of attack, or is it that I'm just tired of studies in the university?
You're tired of me?
Yes, there's a certain frequency that you get embedded, don't you? You know. Anyway, if it's attack, how do I get rid of it? Jogging as physical exercise doesn't seem to help. So it's probably, you know, watch some comedy or something.
Okay, well, we'll be serious. Obviously, I can't know without having to talk to you, and I'm going on holiday, but I am really happy to talk to you after the holiday, because you very kindly, and I didn't know, I don't think I knew you were doing that, you very kindly did that. and I'm very grateful to you for doing that. It's always my problem that it was going to be the English-speaking world that, you know, picked up on what I was saying and went and did its own research. And I really desperately want other countries to have access to make their own choices as to what they want to do. Right. Let us assume it is a psychic attack because you are passing the message across. Let's assume that some energy form doesn't like what you're doing because you are disseminating the information to Russia. It's a very important country, and I've often spoken highly of the leadership there. So I won't laugh and say, oh, don't be silly, you're probably just, you know, sticking a pencil in your ear, and that's why you've got this high-pitched buzzing. So what I'd like you to do is to stop translating for a little bit and think about how you're going to psychically protect yourself. I'm hoping you're not working on your own. I'm hoping you're working with a group. I'm hoping that you are a member of Connecting Consciousness. You need to talk to some people about how you can psychically protect yourself. I always say to people, don't put yourself in harm's way. I need people to do what they need to do. You see what I'm saying to you? You know, if someone knows they've got to do something, then they do it. But you don't do it if it brings you pain. So what I suggest is you stop translating for a little bit, talk to the friends around you, find out how to psychically protect yourself. I'll have a chat with you when I come back from holiday. And what we can do is see what the best way to go with that. I am hoping to meet with President Putin's representative at the end of this year. So that's why I'm not laughing when you tell me that you are translating and you might be attacked. It's very possible. So I won't get the chance to meet President Putin, but I will get to speak to his representative at the end of this year. Thank you.
We'll see what we can do about getting Vladimir on the Wolf Spirit Radio. Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Having on your show, you could even interview him. You know. Megan.
Well, actually, I'll just talk to you about that. He can understand English. So I can speak to Mr. Putin in English, but when he answers in Russian. And therefore, you need a translator. So when I say to people, I've actually Skyped President Putin, everybody laughs at me. Just, they don't believe me. But I'll tell you that Mr. Putin understands English perfectly well, but will not speak in English, prefers to speak in Russian. So you always have to have your translator with you, and I'm very fortunate in Connecting Consciousness. I have a Russian-born person who is ready lined up to do just that for me for the end of the year.
I have heard through various back channels that sometimes he's heard things that have been broadcast on Wolf Spirit Radio. That's all I can say. right, so...
Well, hang on, I'll tell you a bit more.
All right.
Mr. Putin is advised by a number of people, and he has a key advisor, and on another completely different radio show my name was mentioned, and it was actually Wynne Keach who said, oh, you've just had a name check here. That was the earlier part of this year. And I said, oh, really? And this questioner just out of the blue said, oh, what do you think about Simon Parkes, to this advisor for Mr. Putin? And this was, I think, in March of this year. And what I was told, Wynne told me, was the guy said Simon Parkes is absolutely accurate. So that's an advisor to President Putin in March. So no wonder people don't, you know, the elite like me talking about Russia. So let's just watch this space and see how we develop it.
Well, all I can say is...
this is not Keystone Cops.
Meanwhile, Anna Glav, who is also from Russia.
Oh, lovely.
Hello, Simon. Can you please explain the meaning of the colors of human eyes and the origin of these colors? God bless you, Simon and JP, for the light you bring into this world.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say. Thank you from both of us. Well, obviously I'm not a doctor and I've never pretended to be a doctor. I wouldn't want to be. Or a geneticist. And they will give you the Charles Darwin, you know, story that this is how it happens, etc., etc. And I've never accepted that. And to be honest, most of these people know it's all bunkum. But they go along with it because there's a really good pension at the end of it. I don't blame them from that perspective, you know. I mean, they're controlled and they're managed and manipulated. They don't know any different. If the population of the world really is 8 billion, then an awful lot of people live in Africa. And they naturally have brown eyes. Not exclusively, but they naturally have brown eyes. So that's quite a sizable portion of the population who genetically have brown eyes. But nevertheless, of the best research that's ever been done, it's something between 1.5 and 1.8 of the population have green eyes. That's amazing. Less than 2% of the whole world have green eyes. So we need to ask ourselves, why might that be? Think about someone who's really, really, not just rich, but really powerful and basically runs part of the world. They subscribe to a reptilian-based overlordship and they have unwritten rules. We call them the Illuminati, don't we? And they will judge people by the colour of their hair and the colour of their eyes, the shape of their face and the build of their body. So they will have set patterns or pigeonholes or boxes to put people in depending on those characteristics. That's why the sex object Marilyn Monroe, you know, had blonde hair and I believe she had blue eyes. So if a very powerful person was going to have a female give away canapés at a big swish dinner party, he would make sure that she had blonde hair and blue eyes. If we wanted somebody to answer the telephone and take private and confidential information, we would make sure that she had red hair and green eyes. The interesting bit is those that have brown hair. So we need to understand that these are arbitrary values placed on humanity by an elite group. Not because people with green eyes are better than people with blue eyes who are better than people with brown eyes, but they have created these rules based on the reptilian manipulation of the genetics. If you have green eyes, it means that you have a long history on this planet in positions of responsibility. You may not have it now, but that's what I take it to mean. If you have blue eyes, there's a very good chance that you are what I call higher human, Palladian. But I'll come in with a caveat that that doesn't mean that people in Africa can't be Palladian. It does rather annoy me when people will look at an African person and, you know, dismiss the fact that they could be Palladian because they don't have blue eyes. It's total nonsense. You have to understand that you could have a Palladian soul in your body, but your human genetics could overwrite that and give you brown eyes because you come from the African continent. And that's the difference between somebody who has a stereotypical image of what a Palladian will look like and then somebody who can look into the soul of that person and say, oh, they're Palladian, I don't care what colour their eyes are. So we have a situation on this planet where you might be rhesus negative in your blood. You might have green eyes, et cetera, et cetera. It's also genetics in terms of the country or countries that your immediate family have come from. That's actually very important. Also any religion that may have been involved in that family. So although I say we don't particularly favour religion, it's always an indicator of a particular group or a control system within a group over the last few hundred years or so. I'm quite careful with this topic because it can create an us and them situation. And remember, it doesn't matter whether you've got brown eyes or blue eyes, we should all be equal. but it's this hierarchical position which has been given by the reptilians through the Anunnaki, through the control system, and it shows itself today. That's why we had racism for so long, and we still have, because Anu had white skin. The senior lord reptile, Anu, was white-skinned. So he was always going to favour humans who had white skin. Think about the first humans that were made on this planet through genetic manipulation. One group had very dark, dark skin, and they were set to dig holes in the ground and mine gold and precious metals. And the other group had much lighter skins and were put in the Garden of Eden. I mean the Garden of Eden. They were tending on the surface. And then think about when I've said to people, read H.G. Wells' book, The Time Machine, which was written in 1895. And the whole story is about a group of people who live underground, tending machines, and they have a very hard, rough life. And those who live on the surface of this earth, and they're very fair-skinned, and of course in the end what happens is that in the book, the people who are tending the machines underground come up at night and basically eat the people who live on the surface. And remember, H.G. Wells was a member of the Fabian Society. And, of course, very recently, the leader of the Labour Party has had to see off a challenge by a number of his own members of Parliament who are quite elitist and are members of the Fabian Society. So people in the Fabian Society can connect to an Illuminati control system. Fascinating question, and I don't want to go on any longer because it's time for tea, isn't it?
Yes, I know. I wonder if my situation can support some music. Well, look, let's see if I can just get a little bit of Enya. And those pesky Aldebarans again, but it's a nice tune, Aldebaran by Enya.
Well done.
And welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks and myself, JP. So, from colours to all the way back to the Sphinx of Egypt. Megan from New Zealand is saying, Simon, what can you tell us about the Sphinx of Egypt? Is it of significance in its time of being built and now? Is it? Thank you as always and much love. So is it of significance in its time?
Thank you, Megan. Yes, people have always built monuments to recognize something. So it may well have been significant to those people at that time. And when we look back on it, we struggle to identify what that significance will be. The problem we have with the Sphinx is that the original face was removed, and it's assumed it's the pharaoh Khafre that had his likeness chiseled onto the front of it. It was a very convenient, because it takes away the original lion or feline feature that had on. The reason for me it would be interesting was I'd like to know whether it was a feminine or a male lion. I believe it to be male because there are other lions on the planet that are feminine. Not my research. Others have researched using a freely available NASA software program that positions the stars. I think it was Duval, potentially, who might have been the one who kicked off on this research. And he showed that somewhere between 12,500 and 15,000 years ago, the Leo the Lion star constellation was right above the Giza platform where the pyramid is. And he assumed, not incorrectly, that when that star constellation was above the Egypt, they built a lion to, you know, recognize it. Well, why that was unique was because most Egyptologists will assume that the Sphinx is between 3,000 and 5,000 years old. And the very strange thing about modern science is that you have universities that have many faculties, and you have a long corridor. You know, at one end of it is the Egyptologist group, and then you walk down the corridor and there's the geologist department. Well, we know that if you take a geologist from a university and then an Egyptologist from the same or another university, and take them to the Sphinx, they will both come out with different dates for it. The Egyptologist will say, oh yes, this is Kafur, because I want to get a permit to dig in Egypt, and if I say it's anything other than that, the Egyptian government will never let me in here, I'll never be something great, I'll never, you know, have my nameplate on the door, so people have got to knock respectfully and then come in and hear my prognostications about ancient Egypt. So I'm just going to give out the same BS that has been since time began. The geologist, who doesn't require a permit to go and dig for artifacts in Egypt, looks at the rock and says, yeah, well, this is damaged by water. The sides of the Sphinx show huge water damage. And the last time there was any significant water was, of course, the melting of the Ice Age, which was probably between 10,500 and 12,000 years ago. So, you know, any sane person would look at the Sphinx's body and say, right, that's running water that's caused that. We don't assume that an Egyptian has stood here with a hose for 1,000 years running water off it. So it must be between 10,500 and 12,000 years ago, which is very interesting because Duval came up with those same sort of figures. All right, let's go develop the question a bit more. Why would you have a lion there? Well, I've always said that the Great Pyramid was part its construction, and I don't mean physically carrying, but its creation, its part construction, was tasked by a reptilian-type organization to a group of what we would call felines from Orion stroke Sirius, or Cyrus, depending how you want to pronounce it. So I believe that all of these carvings that show lions in procession with humans is not the fanciful creation of the artist who says, let's, you know, put some masks, lion masks on people. That's what an Egyptologist will tell you. That's a man with a lion mask on. Now, why a man would walk with a lion mask down a procession, I don't know. But my understanding is that the artist is actually trying to tell us that these off-planet entities were part of this royal makeup, and they were having some influence to have this designed. That is why the Sphinx has a lion on it. Now, when you look at it, you would think that the Sphinx was older than the Great Pyramid because it's so badly damaged and water-worn. But I don't believe so. I believe the Great Pyramid is older than the Sphinx. Originally, the pyramid was covered in white limestone, very, very hard, which resisted. The Sphinx didn't have that. It was just a natural bedrock soft limestone, so it weathered incredibly quickly. So, yes, my understanding is it's representing a alien off-group planet group that came here, helped to design the plateau. It was a technological base. It wasn't just a berry people. And they used the materials of the planet. That's the thing that really confuses people. You imagine if off-planet entities arrive, they would open the doors and they'd bring out all their wonderful gizmos and gadgets, and they do everything. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at a group of people at this particular time who arrived, whose technology was not different from ours, 2016. But they had left all of their heavy lifting equipment, shall we say, or their huge power, you know, at home. They only arrived with what they had in the spaceship. And, you know, science fiction stories about, oh, cannibalize the spaceship. Well, you know, you just don't do that. That is your ticket home. You do not cannibalize your one way out. So you can never do that. So they arrived with limited resources. And what they did was they used the humans to do all the work for them. And they used their advanced mathematics and their advanced technologies to make it easier. There was some lifting of the stones by sound waves. You can actually use sound, and a number of people have hooked onto that. So better stop there, others, but we'll take all the show up with that. So it was a great question, thank you.
Fascinating article, fascinating concepts. Okay, from the Sphinx to the moon. Our last full moon, this is from Jude from New Zealand, CC New Zealand. Our last full moon showed a 30 degree move anti-clockwise to the usual face we always have seen. Very strange. Do you have any information about this? Love and gratitude from Jude.
It's really nice. No, I haven't, I'm afraid. I understand the moon is really important. I have a slight problem because the bad guys use the moon. The moon's fine, but they use it for bad purposes, or they use its image for bad purposes, and the energies that are given off by it. It's not a real moon, of course. It's a satellite that was placed there as part of the control system, and therefore we shouldn't be surprised that evil elements of the Illuminati will use the moon. Diana, Princess of Wales, who was murdered in Britain, of course, was described as the moon goddess. So I always have a bit of an issue with the moon. I know a lot of recent launches by American satellites, part of the mind control program, link in with those people who have been pre-programmed to do with the phases of the moon. And that's something that's not really understood by even people who research the situation. Here's an interesting aside, that many people who suffer from sleepwalking do so, and if you keep a diary, you'll find that it's to do with the full moon, it's moonlight. And if you can actually get some thick, heavy curtains and pull them across and reduce the moonlight on your sleepwalking will reduce dramatically. So, to the question, no, I haven't. It's simply because the moon is one of those things that, as an artificial base with internal chambers and on the what we call the far side, not the dark side of the moon, on the far side of the moon where there is a number of facilities, it's something that I've not really studied beyond that. But thank you anyway.
All right, as a corollary to the lion question, or the Sphinx question, I actually got some very crazy ideas about the pyramid, but we'll talk about I talk about that on my show. Today is the 7th, tomorrow is the 8th of the 8th, 2016, yeah. And everybody's going, oh, it's the Lion's Gate portal. Do you have any words on that?
Actually, through history, there have been a number of openings of portals, and we know that what the elite try and do is set up monuments from time to time to try to connect and harness this energy or transmit it around the earth. Portals are opening and closing all the time. Some portals stay open, some don't, and some are free and can be used, some are, you know, guarded or hacked. There has been talk about a Lion's Gate portal, and I don't believe it's got anything to do with lions. we often hear about portals that are given a title or a name simply to try to get it into human consciousness so that we accept it more. If I called it the alligator or crocodile portal, you wouldn't go near it with a barge pole. But if we call it the panda or the lion's gate, etc., etc., then it has a different resonation and we might engage with it. Many of these portals actually take the name from the environment or the geography that they're on. Most of them, I wouldn't actually recommend that people become too involved with. So many portals are being guarded at the moment to prevent negative forces coming in. From time to time, certain things try to blockade run. They try to get through the portal and they're not being successful, which is great. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about that. All I would just ask people is if whatever portal they may be interested in, please be very cautious of it. It's not that it may be a negative thing. It may be in a very beautiful, energetic part of the earth. But you can bet your bottom dollar that the negative guys have stationed evil intent around that portal. You know, think about on our own turf, places like Silbury Hill, Glastonbury, places that are good intrinsically, But we all know that when we go there, we feel the dark energy that exists around it, around the periphery. So I would just say to people, please be very careful. Thank you.
Okay. Meanwhile, back on the third dimension, and now onto the fourth dimension. From A.W., you said in the past that the ratio between negative and positive beings in the fourth dimension was roughly 75% negative and 25% positive. When and how did things first go wrong in this dimension? And what do you believe was the source's original intention for the fourth dimension, along with the reason for creating multiple dimensions in general?
That's a really good question. I don't know that we can say things went wrong, because if we believe in free will, that's where those beings wanted to take themselves. We can say that it didn't take them in the right direction if we're all about evolving, but maybe it took them in the right direction because they needed to experience where they are now in order to make a choice as to where they go in the future. So we have to be careful, because when we judge things and we look at things, we do it from our standpoint. And of course we do, because that's what we are. But sometimes we need to take a step back. But it's a very good question. Let's do my best here. All right. When SBC, whatever it is, evolves and becomes conscious, it makes choices. And if it always goes to where it gets rewarded, then it begins to create a service to self. So if I like jellies, nice jelly, and if I always go seeking the jelly, then I start to feed myself rather than think about other things. So a number of races decided that they wish to become very strong, very powerful. They wish to have everything for themselves and to hell with anyone else. But they didn't see it as wrong, because they saw it as part of we wish to survive. Now that, as a sentiment, is really valuable, but if it starts to impinge and disrespect other races, then it's not good. And what these certain groups were doing were so focused on their own survivability, their own development, that they began to see others as subservient to this one overriding need. So we've got particularly a reptilian race, and particularly a number of grey races, where their whole raison d'etre was, we wish to expand, we wish to dominate, and also we wish to have what you've got. So if you've got a piece of technology which we haven't invented yet, why should I bother to invent it when I can just take it from you? The Europeans did the same to the Africans 200, 300 years ago. I like your land, I like this, I'll just take it. So it's understandable, but it's always when a particular group of people are putting their own self-interests above everyone else. It's no different from the elite running the planet at the moment. But what's occurring is that the energy that these beings have made is so dense and so heavy that the fourth dimension is impinging down into this reality. And that's why so many people in the third dimension are now getting glimpses of the fourth dimension reality. I just let the ambulance go by. There we go. It's almost creating a bubble within a bubble. In other words, a budding off universe within a multiverse. So it's a separate verse within another verse, and that's very dangerous, because it will be impossible for any race that's in its own trapped universe to evolve out, because it becomes detached from the main ladder of evolvement. So you have your dimensions that you evolve up, but if you bud off into a separate verse within that, it's incredibly difficult, because you lose connection with the energies. Now, the mantid race is also in the fourth dimension, but they are not heavily weighting down in the same way that many of these other groups are. And what eventually would happen would be that they would be isolated. and they would just, you know, have less access to resources. Now, maybe that's what's got to happen. Maybe they've got to do that to realise. If you think about in Great Britain, the Rendlesham incident, RAF Bentwaters, where a Triangle spacecraft landed, and whether it was planned or whether it was opportunistic, when a member of the military base touched one of the panels on this craft, it took a sample of that person's DNA. This Triangle craft had actually time traveled. It had come from the future back in time, about 1980. Took a sample of DNA, went back to the future, and was then able to use that DNA to re-engineer a grey alien race to give them a chance to survive. So in other words, if we have a grey alien race that realises it's going nowhere and wishes to bring in new genetic material and try and transform itself, then it's trying to do it in a physical way. But what we're talking about here is how we transform ourselves in an energy way. Now, maybe the two are not dissimilar, but ultimately, at the moment, we are facing a situation where the human race is on the verge of a wonderful fruition to its belief. In other words, it will advance through the fourth and into the fifth. We don't need to go to the fourth and stay in the fourth because we've already experienced it. So I always say this for clarity. Some people say we're going straight to the fifth. That's not accurate. We are passing through the fourth, but we won't stop there. And we will go to the fifth. Now, interestingly enough, I've had reports of other remote viewers, nothing to do with the Farsight Institute, to my knowledge, other remote viewers who have looked just a few years ahead, so in all our lifetimes, and have seen only 200 million people on the planet, as opposed to 8 billion. And it's caused some consternation because they're saying, but there's been no disaster, there's been no wipeout. They can't understand why there are only 200 million people on the planet. And these are very credible remote viewers. So, you know, it's interesting because what I see coming is that the planet will change and a proportion of people who are willing, able, and want to evolve and change will move into the fifth, and the vast majority, unfortunately, who are not yet ready will remain in a denser environment, just as the reptilian race is heavily down in the fourth. So on this planet, there will be a large group of people who will remain in this position, and a group that will energetically move upwards. So those who wish to stay and be managed by psychopaths, to have nonsense given to them over the television and the newspapers, to be lied to every way, they'll stay because that's their world and that's what they want to do, and you know, they're not ready to evolve. Those who see it and frankly are quite sick of it, they will actually energetically move. So it's a very exciting time. Of course, a regular scientist would just, you know, just throw their hands up in the air and say, well, this is all nonsense. But it isn't, and it's happening around us. And those people who have eyes to see and ears to hear can see the changes that are occurring. Again, it's positive. I've always said we will make it, but it's going to be difficult. And, you know, I gave this interesting take on the Farsight's remote viewing experiences regarding this potential catastrophic event somewhere in the States. You know, that is the sort of thing that bad people do to terrify good people. If you are losing control of humanity and you're a bad person, you do more of the same. You tighten the thumbscrews. You do what Adolf Hitler did. He burnt down the parliament building and blame it on someone else. You know, there's nothing new with these people. They're all completely crazy and mad. You know, they'll just do what they can only do because they're not very creative. They'll just give you more of the same. And that is an indication that it's all managed. It's the same old terrorist type of attack. Nothing new, same thing. So you know, we need to be strong. We need to actually understand that we have to go through this to come out the other end. And not everybody will choose to come out the other end. That's not necessarily bad, because they clearly have got more learning to do. Doesn't make us better. It just means that those who are going to make the change have been at it longer and have been round several times and are heartily sick of it and are ready to get off the carousel. So it's a really good question. Thank you.
A question from Maren. Hi, Simon and JP. Thank you so much for your show. My question is, why do we have to eat, or why is it that we need to eat to live on this planet? Or who designed that we need food? Many thanks for your time.
Right. It seems a silly question, but actually it isn't, because it leads into, will we need to eat in the future? Right. When the first humans arrived on this planet, a very long time ago, they were 12th dimensional. And there's a reason for the story. You'll see why. And they crash landed. And they were 12th dimensional, and the spaceship was 12th dimensional. And in order to survive, the advanced technologies had to try to bring that 12th dimension down to 3. I think something like 70% of the crew died because they couldn't make that change. And when they made it out onto the planet's surface, they tried to eat the vegetation that was around, because they needed to anchor themselves into the consciousness of the planet. Charles Darwin's right that when an animal evolves, it evolves around the food source. Plants do the same and insects do the same. You evolve around what you eat. But humans were largely designed to eat non-meat matter. If you think about our own teeth, the vast majority of them are for grinding, not for cutting. So that should tell us something. So we do need to eat. Now, if anybody tells you I don't need to eat, you need to be very, very careful about that, because you still have an organic body. You still have a digestive tract. And unless you are going to immediately get rid of that and have a light body, an energy body, you are going to need to eat. But you need to eat less. As the energies alter, and they are altering on this planet, if your body is actually in tune with the energies coming from galactic center, from source, and from the consciousness of the planet herself, you will actually find that in these times now, you are eating less. Now, I say that to people now, they'll say, that's because it's summer. You know, I always eat a salad in summer. When it gets cold, I'll be eating steak and kidney pud. That's a very British thing for our American listeners. But that's not happening. People who are changing are requiring less food, because they are receiving energy, first of all, from sunlight, and secondly, from the energy consciousness, which is encoded with information coming from both the source and from the planet herself. Remember that we were born on this planet. Therefore, we are connected to the planet. As the planet changes, we have the choice to either stay or to go with that change. And those people who are making that change, either consciously, excuse me, or subconsciously, they are actually requiring less food. But my warning is, please don't, because you think you might be spiritual, you're going to stop eating. That is not going to do you any good at all. Whilst you have, we all have at the moment, physical bodies, we need to ensure that. Now, there are some holy people in Tibet and some other places who have made that spiritual journey and are existing on, you know, handful of leaves. That is because they're vibrational resonance has risen so high that they are sustaining their body on energy gained from non-organic material. But we can't just make the leaps and jumps. We have to do this gradually. So it's a very good question. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. I've actually had these periods recently, and they seem to coincide with CME, solar flares,
yeah.
where my stomach just, I just don't want to eat anything. I feel kind of sick just eating anything. So maybe that's part of it.
It is. Absolutely it is. There's no question in my mind. You know, look, people who listen to our show are going to be spiritual. That's why they're listening to it. There are people who are spiritual that don't listen to this show, but they listen to other shows. And the point is that these people, this group of people, are making the change consciously. There are a heck of a lot of people, the vast majority of people, who wouldn't think to listen to anything like this. And they're not changing. They are not changing. But, you know, we don't need to look down on them. We just think that's their choice. They're choosing to stay in this reality. You know, those of us who think the way we do are sick of it. We're sick of this control system. We know the truth. We need to be let free so that we can do what we know is right. So we will change. But those who are not ready to change won't. It doesn't mean we're any better than them. It just means that we are ready to make this move. But anyway, it was a really lovely question.
Yes, indeedy. So, now, from Paul, a DNA question. Can you give us a list of the 12 star families that altered our DNA?
Not all of them.
By the way, sorry, I just want to jump in there.
Hmm.
The incident that you described where the ship crash landed from the higher dimensional.
Yeah.
I spoke this Sunday, or this last Monday, to Eva Zemanova, who is the person who's putting that story out. So we're gonna have a lot more from her in the future. Because she's kind of all bundled up with some higher dimensional information.
Right, now I've heard the name. I've never met her, but I have heard the name. The interesting thing is that the reptilian elite on this planet hate her. Because she presumably is talking about how humans first got here, as opposed to the reptilian lie, which is the reptilians created humanity.
I thought so.
That's why reptilian people will try to discredit anybody who says, actually, humans are a standalone entity and were not created by reptilians, because that's what the reptilians have always wanted humanity to believe on this planet, that the reptilians are the gods of humans because they built them. That's what the Sumerian tablets are showing, because they've been altered. But no, anyone who talks about this original spaceship crash, God knows how many millions of years it was. That I don't know.
Well, according to Eva, it's something like up to 80 to 500. That's the spread of 80 to 500 million years ago.
Right,
long time ago.
Right, I don't know the dates, but I do know a 12th dimensional spacecraft crashed. And you know what? The people on there were a link to Lyra. They have connections with Lyra. That is why the reptilians, whenever they did genetic alteration, and the evil people, unfortunately, are still in charge now, will always go for Lyrans, because they have the pure line. They connect to it. And that's anathema to reptilians, who just want to overwrite the truth by saying, oh, you know, the reptilian culture created this. They don't want to recognize the fact that Lyra is the birthplace of humanity. So, yeah, I'm really interested to hear her, what she says. So, well done.
Very, very interesting. Sorry. Very, very interesting. I've also done a show myself about the Lyran attack.
Oh.
And my personal recollection of what happened.
Okay.
Because I went to travel back. I traveled back on some of the these feelings, and it's a very interesting conversation with myself. So, let's now forward onto. So we started with this condensed Lyran, traumatized, confused condensed Lyran, and then. Was it the reptilians next, or did other people mess about with them before the reptilians arrived?
The reptilian group that we identify with was the last group to alter humanity. There have been a number of groups, and we have about what we call the 12 strands, but it's a bit confusing. Doesn't mean that 12 separate alien races landed over a period of 5 or 6 million years and tinkered about. That's not what it means. What it means is a smaller number of off-planet races came and did that, but the genetics they used to tinker about with the human race contained more than just their own group. So, for instance, a reptilian group was using Lyran genetics on the humans. You had to do that because if you create a creature on the planet that is too far removed from the signature of its home planet, the planet will reject it, and that creature will become barren, incapable of bringing forth life, and it will just basically die off. So human of some form always was going to be used as a stock part of the genetics. The question was, what were they adding to that and for what purpose? Well, the purpose was that they weren't prepared to wait 25, 30, 40 million years for the humans to evolve to a level that they could work with. They needed fairly intelligent creatures now. But prior to that, other entities had arrived here who weren't into the control system, and they just looked at what they've got and said, oh, we'll have a little tinker with this, we'll do a little bit of this and we'll do a little bit of that, but not with a game plan at the end of it. Just simply, they would say, we see the potential in this monkey, because when these humans arrived in 12th dimension and converted to third dimension, they basically de-evolved. So they became like ape people because they didn't have the technology. They lost the ability to be telepathic. The spaceship basically was covered over by mud and rocks. So it was this group, but we have here a group of very highly spiritual beings, but in very primitive bodies. Now, when the reptilian group arrived, they couldn't believe their luck, because one of the things reptilians value is genetics. And humans provide DNA and genetics over and above what the reptilians have themselves. So it's tradable. I've said before that if you are going to fly a spacecraft, you particularly want a humanoid species to fly it, because they fly it better and they fly it faster. Reptilians traditionally can get 3, 4, 5 times the speed of light, and then they're in trouble. That's why they use portals to travel, because they can't in real time travel any faster. But a human piloting a spacecraft can. It's very important. That's why human genetics are trainable. So we have maybe somewhere between 3 and 5 physical interactions on this planet with the express intention of artificially speeding up the number one life form. But it was the last group, the reptilian task force, that created humankind as we understand it. So when we look around the planet and we look at ourselves, that was the form, the final form, that was created by the reptilians probably around 220,000 years ago. But they couldn't have done that if others hadn't done what they'd done, because we were at a stage through other people's development which meant the reptilians could do that. But the reptilians are probably one of the finest geneticists anywhere, certainly in the 4th and the 5th dimension. So their knowledge and technology was such that they could take what was here and alter it. So they did not create humanity. Humanity was already of its own creation. but they altered humanity. And that's what we are today. We are a hybridized form of monkey, higher human, and reptilian. That is what we are, and that's why humans are so fractured, partly, and so unsure of who they are, because the elite who have the truth have hidden it. So, of course, most people accept what they are. We are without our birthright. We are without our knowledge. And, you know, we deserve it. And it's not that we're going to be frightened or scared of the fact that, God, we were 20% reptilian or 10% this, because that's life. When life is created on this planet, it's neither good nor evil. It's the intent that we go with it. So, you know, we need to be told the truth. And I know, JP, you have always a great interest in, you know, the creation of humanity. And I think that we need to celebrate the fact that we are a mix, and the Lyran race is absolutely key to not just the past, but the future. It is the Lyran element that will allow humanity to evolve. It will allow humans like me, who have got a sizable portion of reptilian in them, to evolve, providing the reptilian elements that people have is in tune with the Lyran part. You have to come to be at peace with yourself. But without that Lyran 12th strand connection, humans couldn't make that link. So, you know, it's a great big plan, isn't it? You know, this spaceship lands and it drops 12th dimensional people with a strong Lyran link here, and here we are, the circle's almost rejoined, and we are ready now to evolve upwards. So there are things that create plans that we can't even conceive. Things that are greater than reptilians, greater than AI. This is the consciousness of the universe itself. And that's a plan that we either fight against, or we open our hands and say, look, I'm prepared to believe in this, and I'm prepared to follow it and go where I will. Good question. Thank you.
Indeed. Indeed. And it brings up so many other discussions that, one of the reasons that I first connected with you was because of this whole link of the whole Maldek thing, and then we meet Wynn, and then we meet, all these others, and then this Lyra thing starts coming up, and, I get these memories and feelings, and all that comes back, and what it seems like is that we're now bridging from now back to Lyra as if it was just last week or yesterday and not, you know, billions of years. And that it's just like it was a bad dream. It was yesterday. Mm-hmm. We had a bad dream last night. And that we are back in these bodies as our original Lyran selves.
Okay.
And I've actually been doing sessions with people, bringing them back to their original Lyran self. And I say, you know, what's their color? What's their name? And, they get this connection, you know, they've got a sound and a color that enables them to reconnect their own Lyran self with their today self.
Yes.
And, basically everything unzips, all the neuroses, all of everything, you just become who you really are. It's beautiful.
Well, there's a real good key in that, because, people who can, connect and identify color, not with emotion, that's too primitive, but with energies. They have a strong Lyran link, or at least they have a strong link through other human groups to Lyran, through those energies. Many, many people, can speak in colors. I mean, they will sort of say, this particular color is a male energy, or this particular color is a female energy, and this is an aggressive energy. Now that's key, because that shows me that they are awakening and they are connected through to the Lyran connection. My connection is through Agatha. It's through the fifth dimensional human part of me from the Hollow Earth, which I suppose then goes to Lemuria and then so on. And I don't have the gift that so many do to talk about energies and colors, but I'll just recount a very short funny story. When I was probably around 5-6 years old, I had developed a pain somewhere in my physical body, and my mother was very concerned and phoned the doctor. The doctor came to the house, and of course, doctors in those days were even less helpful than they are now. And the doctor said to me, "What sort of pain is it to a 5 or 6 year old, you see?" So I replied quite simply, "It's a green pain." Green pain. To which he said, "Blah, blah, blah, you know, blah, 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 blah. Is it a stabbing pain? Is it this sort of pain?" So when I was that age, I was obviously connecting because I was seeing things in colours. Now, I've lost that, sadly, now, but there are many adults who haven't lost that and actually express that. So I think it's an important sign.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is something very, very special about a particular colour. And actually, it's, I don't suggest the colour. Which is what's interesting. What makes it really interesting, I just say, when you do this and you do that, do you see a colour? And they say, oh, yeah, well, something, you know, some is blue, some is magenta, some is pink, some is white. All different colours. It's very interesting. A very individual thing. And I love that individuality of the whole singular process. I'm enjoying taking people through, because every time I get a bit back of mine as well. So Simon, let's move on to Kurt Murphy. What is going on when one is calm and serene in the moment and a trigger sound happens and I go into extreme panic, fight and flight syndrome, helplessness, hopelessness, rage, and a feeling of wanting to die? Examples. Again, there's one. These are examples of gum chewing, popping, snapping, tapping fingers, clicking pens incessantly, crunching sounds with the mouth, and my whole life is affected by this phenomenon.
Right.
It has gotten worse as time goes on. I can't work in a job in an office with humans because they eat. Same with college classes, and I'm now 67 years old. I came with nightmares, boils, and styles, but these have subsided. Mm-hmm. I become immobile, and the effects can last up to a week. I do everything I know through research. I have to remove myself from the source. Otherwise, I want to stop it by force. I live an isolated life. Thank you, Kurt Murphy. So.
Right. Wow. It's yes, it's something, you know, on the face of it, you would be hard pressed to try to work that out. It's very interesting. I had a person who had a fear of buttons, and there is a, I can't remember the term for it, but there is a word for someone who has a phobia and a fear of buttons. But in this person's case that I was working with, it was the fact that her grandmother, who beat her incessantly, had a cardigan with great big buttons on it. And so whenever she saw buttons, it just reminded her of the physical pain, and so she would be terrified of buttons. And once we could sort that out, then she could, you know, clear that, and now she can actually, you know, sit with some buttons around her. This might be of a similar nature. However, I'm struggling to understand the chewing sounds, because I understand the clicking of fingers and the clicking of pens, because that is a form of trigger that is used for people who've been mind controlled. You are wanting to activate somebody in a business meeting to do a pre-arranged something or other. You will click your pen or snap your fingers. And the Illuminati have used that since the 1960s. So that I can cope with, and I understand that. But the eating, I don't. So this is a person who needs, perhaps, to, after I come back from holiday, to try and get in touch with me on the email. Because, you know, you shouldn't be having to live a life like that. If it's something that we can understand and we can sort, you know, I mean, one of my first questions would be, what sort of official doctor help have you received? And, you know, try to understand what sort of help that person has had, and then try to follow it back to see where it's coming from. So if it's a purely a response learnt reaction, then that isn't something I can help them with. But if it's come from a trauma-based programming, then it's something that I can help them with. So I suggest that you send a message on the email that I've often given out, and I will respond after my holiday. Just on, as a caveat to that, I got another message from my provider telling me that they'd locked the email properly because someone had tried to hack into it. But I will get that sorted. That's just a phone call to India. So, yeah, please, this person, just get in touch with me when I come back from holiday. Thank you.
And by the way, Simon, how is your EMF situation now?
Well,
everybody's very concerned about, you know, you were being fried, boiled, griddled and grilled.
Well, I was. I'm just amazed that I was still, you know, operating, frankly. I don't get it. I should have been not dead, because that's melodramatic, but I should have been seriously debilitated. Obviously, my head is very thick.
Well, it can stop him.
So I'm waiting. What will happen is, after my holiday, an engineer will turn up, and we will have a serious discussion, which will end up with them redefining the digital rays, basically.
Show them who's boss.
Thanks, JP. I just want to thank everyone because, you know, it is absolutely disgusting that a group of elite people, it's not just me, is it? It's lots of people who try and get the truth out. They would do that. You know, they can't shoot me. They can't run me over. They can't poison me. They're not allowed to do that. So what do? They bombard the top part of the house where my office is with energy waves that are so high that they breach, actually a Swiss, the European standard is based on a Swiss reading. It's so off the scale. It's so illegal that, you know, once it's discovered, then they have to, by law, do something about it. But the very fact that some crazed, evil person would say, right, we have a big list of those that we don't like. Okay, we can't go and shoot them. So what we'll do is we'll just basically, you know, stop them by bombarding them with these horrible, horrible microwaves. And I want to thank everybody who has shown compassion, given me love and healing. You know, I really, really appreciate that and I welcome it because, yeah, those of us who do put their heads above the parapet, we do get lots of stuff thrown at us. And yeah, there's certain things that you can shrug your shoulders, but when people are hitting you with an unseen energy, then that's really below the belt. That's really, and they haven't got the guts to stand to my face and say, we really wish you'd shut up. We don't like you empowering people. We don't like you talking about this subject. Just for God's sake, shut up. They won't do that. So what they'll do is they'll use unseen stuff. So thank you to everybody who has sent me best wishes and those who've just thought it. You didn't have to send me any, but you just thought it and you thought, you know, I would like him to be well. So, you know, God bless you. That's really wonderful. Thank you.
So, it has really, it has recently been stated that the US Capitol and Archives has been moved to Denver due to an expected massive tidal wave. Could you share your input on this?
Not quite my understanding, but there is truth in this. Back in the 70s, there was a number of projects where children were sent forward into time. It had to be children from their perspective because children are the ones that would pass through this time machine, basically. And over a good few decades, a mapping was built up which showed that there was a potential timeline that would see part of the United States submerged underwater. And so part of a fail-safe device was to create a backup operation elsewhere. There's no good digging underground because water will just sink down. You have two alternatives. You can either try and go to Mars. There is a command structure on Mars. But if you do that, you see, then you are having to rub shoulders with lots of people off planet, and you're constrained by agreements. If you're an elite and you're on this planet, then you're not constrained by those agreements, and you can dominate the planet because of your technological expertise. So a number of, it's a bit like Star Trek again, the auxiliary control. So if the main control gets taken out, then Captain Jolly Old Kirk could run the starship from his auxiliary control. So a number of auxiliary controls have been placed, not just in the States, but off the States as well. So there is truth in it, but my caveat is that doesn't mean that America is going to be swamped by a tidal wave. It was one of the timelines that was accurately seen. Doesn't mean that we're on that timeline. The Americans are just doing the right thing from their perspective. They are ensuring that they've got a fallback position for each possible timeline. Okay.
Simon. I was just talking to Nancy that you also got another package of Shanghai, is that correct?
Yes, I did.
Right.
It arrived yesterday. I was so...
Have you opened it yet?
Yes, I have.
Right, because in there are magnets that...
There was a bit in the packet, in the plastic packety thing, and it's quite big, and I was going to open it tomorrow, actually. All right.
So that's from Nancy from the States, from Florida. And Nancy and Walter are going to be appearing on the next show. So you're now completely surrounded by EMF protection, because I don't know, we have maybe 30 seconds left. What was your initial feeling when you first touched a piece of Shanghai, Simon?
Well, very interesting. I got the same feeling was when I touched Moldavite. The very first time I touched Moldavite, I held Moldavite in my hand 20 minutes. I felt that I was in another dimension, and then it ran out, and I put two pieces of Moldavite in my hand, and that boosted me up for about 30 seconds. Now I can hold a whole rock of it, and it doesn't do anything. Now, when I touched my first piece of Shanghai, because I never had it before, it was new to me, I felt the same, but it was only for about 30 seconds. But it was that same feeling. I know it's effective because my body responded to it.
Excellent. Well, I've been spending a lot of money that people have been sending for my sessions and things. I bought a whole load of Shanghai because you never know when we'll break down relations with Russia. So I've got some tiles and some pyramids, and I got a few pounds of it now in my kitchen, and it's just wonderful. It's just such a cool, easy kind of vibration to have around.
Well, listen, before we run out of air, you know you very kindly sent me some.
Yeah.
And you know it took 2 weeks to get to me.
Mm-hmm.
It showed signs of being opened.
Good.
So somebody obviously thought, oh, we don't like him getting that. What can we do with it? Mm-hmm. But it is genuine. It's all there. It's fine. And thank you to everyone, as I said, who's been very kind and shown me their love in whatever way.
Here's the way to test it. If it really is, it will conduct... Do you have a meter? Do you have an avometer?
No, but I know a man who does.
Yes. exactly. Ask Wynn. It will demonstrate very, very low resistance.
I think it will, because it was your piece that I held, and it gave me a high. So.
It conducts electrons through that metal. It's a superconductor. Okay. Thank you very much, Simon. And good evening, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, indeed.
And enjoy your holiday.
Please. I really, really am. I need this holiday. I'm so excited.
Excellent.
Okay. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Connecting consciousness.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.